On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. All right, we got a good one today. Basketball just around, like, almost over. One more regular season game at Syracuse, and then we got the ACC tournament coming up. So I got Justin Ferber, editor-in-chief at Cavs Corner, coming on today to talk some basketball, and also talk about his really interesting article looking back at the last 10 years of college basketball, power four hires, and kind of going through some of the data there. Justin, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, of course. Just, I don't have it up in front of me, so the spreadsheet, so just don't quiz me too much. Because I think I remember like the trends and stuff like that, but yeah, and as far as like how long was this guy at this school, like, I don't know.
I need you to go data point by data point. This is going to be an exhaustive spreadsheet show. No. Let's start off with UVA home regular season finale against Florida State. A weird one, a 9 o'clock tip off on a Tuesday night. I can't remember the last time Virginia had like a midweek last home game. It's usually you got that nice Saturday sweet spot, usually against Louisville.
Yeah.
And in past years, you're, you know, trying to clinch an ACC regular season championship, obviously not this year, but Virginia escapes with a 60-57 win. Just any thoughts coming out of that game? I mean, I know it's kind of hard to take stuff out of it was a close game, a good game, but not a great game, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I felt like, and you're right, like the atmosphere was strange because they already did senior day and it was kind of like, all right, this is like almost feels like it's not even happening. But yeah, and then the game time and everything like that. Honestly, I thought it was kind of a clunky game, and I think the officiating had some, you know, part of that played a big part in that, just because there were so many reviews and things. You know, Florida State and UVA is a very interesting matchup, and UVA's had more physical teams in years past, but this year the athleticism difference is pretty stark, but UVA might have more like shooting and skill. You know, just it's an interesting kind of like matchup. UVA just seemed like they were gonna have a really hard time getting in the lane and things like that against Florida State's length. But you know, down the stretch, I mean, I wouldn't say it was like an offensive clinic by either team, but UVA, you know, made the plays they needed to make down the stretch, and Florida State, you know, kind of retook the lead, and then, you know, Saunders hits that three, and then Rohde hit, you know, almost a miracle three in the corner there. But yeah, I mean, they made the plays they needed to make, and honestly, I think Florida State kind of, I don't want to say they imploded because they didn't give up like a huge lead or anything like that, but they didn't make the plays. You know, they got the ball back and, you know, they end up getting fouled, and then there's an offensive foul in the inbounds play and just kind of got away from them at the end there. But yeah, I mean, I felt like it's cool to see them go out with a win at home, especially given everything that's happened this year. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, it's kind of hard to know what to make of a game between two teams that came in, what were they, 7-11 in league play or something like that. So, I mean, I think the two teams are about even, and the home team kind of squeaked it out. So that's how a lot of these games go, I feel like.
Yeah. Real quick on Florida State. I've watched a little bit of them. I haven't watched as much for other ACC basketball this year because the product's been bad. And also Virginia's not really competing at the top of the conference. So it's like, I'm not doing a ton of pre-scouting, but I've seen enough of Jameer Watkins. I was kind of surprised, like he kind of had that game where you're like, wait, that guy had 18 points at the end of the game. Like, where did he score all this?
Yeah, I know. He is kind of like a little bit of a volume scorer, and it just, it feels like they always play like kind of a positionless basketball too. So you kind of lose track of like who's scoring, because it's like everybody's kind of ball handling, everybody's, you know, playing the three, everybody's kind of rotating around on defense, and they can switch everything because of the, it feels like every year they have a lineup that's just like 6-6 to 7-3. And even like Jalen Worley, I mean, comes over from UVA and, or comes over to UVA, and, you know, he was a point guard there for a while, and he's 6-7, you know, and they just, they've had a bunch of guys like that. But yeah, I would say Watkins is their best offensive player. And I was just actually looking up the young man's name because I forgot it. But their center, Malik Ewan, was out. in this game. So I mean, that was a pretty big loss. He was their second leading scorer, and he missed the Duke game as well. So that was kind of, it was kind of 50-50 whether he was going to play or not. So I'm not, I don't, I mean, maybe Florida State wins if he plays. You never know how those things go, but UVA sort of got to take advantage of that, I guess. And the one thing I will say about this team, and I don't mean this like in a complimentary way or like a bad way or anything like that, but it
Neutral.
feel yeah, it feel well, it feels like they're beating the teams that are kind of similar to them more than they were early in the year. And that's really, I've had a lot of people say like they've improved, and I think that's where they've improved, is like they're winning more of those than they're losing. They're still not competing with the top teams in the conference, you know, and like I think that'll probably be their undoing in Charlotte next week. But you know, they have been way more competitive against the Florida States of the world than they were in early January.
Yeah, real quick. I don't remember every Jameer Watkins basket, but I remember every single Christian Nietu basket because it seems like it was the same thing every time. A ball like gets tipped to him and he finishes up with a dunk right there. But yeah, and we'll get into the seeding a little bit for the ACC tournament, kind of what is at stake for Virginia at Syracuse. But I kind of came to the same conclusion after last night. Like they have gotten to the point now where they are beating the teams that they are better than or ahead of in the standings are kind of on equal footing. So like, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Florida State, and so on. But yeah, like there's still obviously clear levels that they're missing to finish a game against Clemson. Obviously they had a good first half, and then, the second half told a similar story to what we've seen the rest of the year. Georgia or Duke, and then the way North Carolina is playing right now. SMU, we've seen that a couple times, although, they gave SMU a real challenge at home. Obviously, a buzzer
Both of those
beater.
games are pretty close, actually. I mean, they led in the second
Yeah,
half
yeah.
at SMU.
They
So,
just kind of, it was like the last 10 minutes against SMU where things kind of got away from them, and Isaac McNealy just couldn't get the ball and couldn't get open for a shot. And Elijah Saunders was battling foul trouble. It was kind of a whole thing back there against SMU. But yeah, I think it kind of it's kind of what it's been for the last half of the season. And yeah, like they're beating the teams that they should now, and I guess that's encouraging in the short. Real quick on the guards, I kind of been clocking this because especially in this game it felt even more drastic. Like they scored, what did I have here in my notes? They scored 44 of Virginia's 60 points in this game, and at times I think in the first half the guards scored all but four of their or two of their points. So it was pretty drastic, and it's kind of like they found a good groove with Day-Day Ames, Andrew Rohde, and Isaac McNealy that those guys are going to carry the load offensively, and it's a nice guard trio. I don't know kind of what the long-term upside is with it, but they have enough of a scoring punch to kind of keep you in games.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, this game, like we said, wasn't, you know, the best offensive showing by either team. But I mean, in other games, they've been able to score quite a few points and like have looked pretty competent offensively, even in some of the games that they lost, like UNC game, for example. You know, they just had some rough runs in that game. But yeah, I mean, the guards have really done a lot of the heavy lifting. I mean, they haven't, UVA just hasn't gotten a lot from their front court in the last month or so. I mean, like Buchanan's been really quiet. I mean, he made some nice passes the other night, and he's playing, you know, he's like having an impact in the game, but like just you're not getting a lot of scoring from him. And Kofi, you know, he had that really hot start to the year, but since then he has not been the same guy. And I mean, that happens a lot with freshmen. I mean, you know, guys hit the wall or the rotations get a little tighter, you know, and then I think Anthony Robinson has kind of taken a little bit of his minutes, you know, and obviously he was battling back from an injury, but or an illness or whatever you want to call it. But and you know, this game they got no points from the bench at all. So I mean, ultimately, if Ames, Rohde, and McNealy aren't doing it, I mean, you're gonna have a tough time.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I have it here. I've kind of been tracking it. Eight of the last nine games, those guys have combined to score at least 40 points. Only game they didn't was against UNC, where they had 37. So still, like 54 was their high against Wake Forest. They had a great game. I thought the guards were really good in that game. Georgia Tech game, they're really good too. Yeah, I was really surprised, and I, heard Ron Sanchez's kind of reasoning afterwards, but the really shrunken rotation, they had two guys come off the bench, play 8 minutes, and that was Jake Coffey and Tane Murray. And then Anthony Robinson only saw 3 minutes. Ishan Sharma saw 1 minute. And
Yeah.
if you blinked, you probably missed it.
And it was at the very end of the game when they were like worried about Florida State fouling, and I was like, well, this is an interesting time to put him in. He
I
hasn't
know. I
played
was.
yet.
It was kind of the reverse of early in the year against SMU when they put Tane Murray in, even though he hadn't been playing that
Yeah,
much for
right.
Ishan Sharma. But yeah, I guess like they were spelling some guys just with a couple minutes here and there for with Jacob Kofi and Tane Murray. But for the most part, he rode his starters. And say what you will about that Elijah Saunders and Blake Buchanan front court, it has not looked great at times. And I think Blake kind of did everything but score in this game, and Elijah did he shot well and then didn't do much else for you out there. That's kind of what I took away.
Yeah, except take one on the chin, literally. But yeah, I
I
mean,
thought immediately back to the Caden Shedrick, Hunter Dickinson
yeah.
situation.
Yeah, there's been a couple of those and switching jerseys and stuff
Yeah.
like that. But yeah, I mean, I think like Elijah's situation is interesting because he got hurt and came back, and it feels like since around that time, even maybe before he got hurt, it kind of felt like, he wasn't quite as impactful offensively as he had been a little earlier in the year, or at least where we thought he might be before the season started, right? I mean, like, I remember going to the blue white scrimmage and I was like, this guy's going to be their best player. And that just hasn't really come to pass. But like, at UVA, you still have to do a lot of other little things, when you're out there. And I know the defense hasn't been as good this year as it is in years past, but you're still kind of doing a lot of the same things. So, there's impact to be made there. And, Blake, I think is, I don't know. Like, I mean, he's not a bad player by any means, but I feel like he hasn't maybe
No.
taken off this year like people thought he might. Everybody was kind of like at UVA, I think, and this is definitely was a trend under Tony. It was like you would see guys kind of get in, they have that first year, they either redshirt or they play a little bit, they get, acclimated to Mike Curtis's program. And Blake actually played more last year than pretty much any big under Tony ever has as a
Yes.
freshman. Then in year two, year three, you kind of become, a veteran presence, and you're, making an impact. And he hasn't, I mean, he's starting almost every game, but, I just haven't seen like the exponential sort of like takeoff that we were hoping to see.
Yeah, I like the energy that he brings out there. He certainly
Yeah.
does a lot for you out there.
He
I just
moves
been
well, all those things. Yeah.
the only thing that's I thought was going to make a huge bump this year with that extra work with Mike Curtis was the hands and
Yeah.
catching the ball in the lane and finishing strong, and that just hasn't happened. Because I was like, before the season, I was like, Blake might be a sneaky like 10 point per game scorer because he
Yeah.
gets so many good looks down there because he's getting in good positions. But yeah, the hands haven't been there. And a couple times last night, we talked about that Andrew Rohde shot. Blake was like fumbling the ball in the lane, and he did that a couple times late in the game where he just kind of was like fumbling it. A couple times it was a turnover. That time he scooped it out enough to Andrew Rohde to get the shot off.
Yeah. That
So
was an
it.
incredible shot. I mean, like, and
Yeah.
Rohde, I mean, for all the things, we've talked about a lot of the things that have been kind of disappointing, like he's been very good and kind of what I think a lot of us thought he would be when he came here. And it took a year, but I mean, he is that guy. And I think the thing that is kind of disappointing, honestly, in a way, is that if he had been this guy last year, that team would have been much better. And he also would have been thriving playing with better guys, or
Yeah.
like, a better overall team. That team probably doesn't get smoked in Dayton, like they did. If Andrew Rohde's playing that way, they're probably not in Dayton,
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's good to see him kind of come into his own after I'm sure all the mental kind of like anxiousness that comes with like not feeling like you're playing your best basketball for a whole season, really.
Yeah. No, major steps forward for him. Real quick on the ACC tournament, I know we were all trying to do the math last night. I thought I had gotten away from math when I, went into journalism and communications and
Yeah.
everything, and it just keeps coming back for you. But basically, what it kind of boils down to for Virginia, a win on Saturday at Syracuse and a little bit of help. I mean, Virginia Tech's playing Clemson. I think you would think that's
If they
a
beat Clemson on the road, I mean, like, you just tip your cap.
yeah, you tip your cap. Congrats,
Yeah.
guys. You
Yeah.
earned it.
Yeah.
So you would think possibly they'll get the help there, but a win for Virginia and they're probably the ninth seed and get that first round bye, which is crazy. And I know Ron Sanchez kind of talked to it on last night because he was saying, not too long ago, they were wondering if they would even make the ACC
Right.
tournament. But I guess my thing is, does it matter where you kind of end up in this? Because you're going to play Duke after that 8-9 game.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people like in my mentions earlier, because I tweeted the scenarios out. We're like, I don't want to be the 9 seed. I don't want to play Duke in the second in the quarterfinals. And that is, like a fair thing. My counter to that would be like UVA didn't really look any better against Louisville, Clemson, or North Carolina. So like, I don't think we can just be like it's Duke's the only problem, because like Louisville beat them by 20 twice, and Clemson handled them in the second half in Charlottesville. And then also you have to remember, as UVA benefited from being the team with extra rest for years, in the quarterfinals, now they'll be the team playing against the team rested if they get that far. I mean, I think they have a pretty good shot at the 9 seed. Syracuse is not playing very good ball right now.
Blue one against SMU. I thought they were going to
I
get a
didn't get
good
to see any
upset
of
there.
that.
Obviously,
But I mean, I think like they haven't beaten a team that's I looked at their schedule earlier. They haven't beaten a team that is going to be in the ACC tournament since I think like February 1st or something like that. The only wins they have are like Miami and Boston College and NC State or something like that. So, I mean, we'll see. And there's a chance that they could actually get the 9 if they lose. It would just require a couple of extra things to go their way. But basically, yeah, I mean, it'll come down to that. If they win, they can't be lower, I don't think, than the 10. So they would have to play Tuesday if they're the 10, but that's as low as they can go. Honestly, like I'd be this is cliche, but I think for UVA, like, and for fans, like the ACC tournament, you just have to kind of like take it one game at a time with this UVA team. And we've had a lot of times in the past where we've been able to kind of look at the bracket and be like, oh, this sets up pretty well for them, because they could actually win the tournament. This team's not winning 5 games in 5 days, I don't think. I mean, it would be, I mean, what NC State did last year is remarkable, but I think you could make a case that that team was better than they used
There's
to
no
be. And
DJ Burns out there
yeah,
ready to
and they
have a
had good
run.
guards. I mean, yeah, they had, and yeah, I think like that team was probably more like a 6 seed in the ACC tournament. And there was like a bunch of teams in like a very small window, if I remember correctly. Like they were right, they were like, 10 and 10 or whatever. And they just
And
kind of fell a little bit farther down. And then they ended up having to play on
yet they were a
Tuesday.
McNeely free throw away from none of that happening and Kevin Keats being out of a job.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like for UVA, like if you're looking at the miracle run, if you're worried about Duke, like I guess you could say like I'd rather play them on Friday or Saturday if I could. Like I get that. But I mean, you're gonna have to go through them, Louisville or UNC or Clemson at some point, because those teams are all gonna get the double byes. SMU might, I guess, but it's not gonna be easy. Like, but I think based on like what I just said a few minutes ago and like how they've been playing, I think they have a pretty good chance if they do play on Tuesday to get through a game, and then play Wednesday. And if they are in the 9 game, I mean, they already beat Georgia Tech once this year. That was at home. But I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to at least be competitive in that game. And then, you get to the quarterfinals, and then it's basically you're hoping to pull off something. UVA hasn't beaten a team anywhere close to the teams, in the top three in the ACC. So they'd have to do something we haven't seen.
And they really haven't been close in a lot of those
No, yeah,
games.
not really.
I like them to win at least one if it's that 8-9 game or if it's a Tuesday game, maybe two. Kind of seeing depending on what the matchups are, but it'll be interesting. But we're gonna talk about just in a second after the break. Obviously, Matt Norlander from CBS Sports had a kind of little bit of an update on the coaching search for UVA as that's kind of working its way in the background. And then I mentioned earlier over at Cavs Corner, you got a great article on some of the research that you did. So we're going to talk about that. And then also a fun thing just to kind of ponder about Kyle Guy and UVA announced last week about the Embrace the Pace TBT team. And so just kind of thinking about who are some of the alumni, what would a team look like, or who are some fun guys to kind of think about being on that team. So we're going to talk about that coming up here on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality. which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. We are back here. I am joined by Justin Ferber, the editor-in-chief at the Cavs Corner, and we're talking a little bit about the coaching search. And, you know, some people kind of said last night, it kind of felt, we talked about the energy. It was a weird energy in the building. And, you know, some of that was the late tip. It was the last home game, but also, you know, I kind of clued into to Ron Sanchez as he was kind of walking off the court and kind of seeing what he does. And I mean, like, you know, it's pretty standard.
I noticed from your question.
Yeah, shake the hands, you know, kiss the babies, but you know, shake hands with Leonard Hamilton, go thank the student section, go thank the band. It's the last home game. And then kind of shook every player's hand as he walked off the court and just kind of, you know, it was kind of a question just because the energy was so weird and it's been a weird season. Were we kind of watching the end of an era of UVA basketball just because – you know, we never got to see the end of Tony Bennett, as at least we didn't think of it in the moment. Did you kind of get that feeling in the air?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it'll feel more like that, you know, when they're eliminated, you know, from the ACC tournament, assuming that's what happens. Yeah, I mean, I also like his comments off the top of the press conference. And again, I don't want to read too much into this because, like, we don't really know Ron that well as a head coach, like, and how he's going to handle things like that. But he thanked everybody at the beginning of that, you know, at the beginning of his remarks. And I thought that was, you know, maybe telling. But yeah, I mean, I think that's where we're headed. I also think it's interesting to talk about end of an era, too, because, like, I kind of almost feel like, I mean, I guess if Ron gets the job, it's sort of a bridge to what happened previously, right? But it kind of feels to me like that's already happened. We just didn't really get like a – we didn't get to like close
– didn't get a chance.
In the maybe normal the, way.
Maybe the Tony Bennett
the blue-white scrimmage. yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, like the blue-white scrimmage, he was out there coaching, and then he was gone, right? And, you know, his last actual game was – well, I wouldn't say one of the worst because it was in the NCAA tournament, but one of the probably like one of the ones that upset the fans the most, maybe or whatever.
It made national news. It was on First Take, and everyone
it doesn't
teed off.
It doesn't help that you're like when you're in Dayton, you're just playing alone, standalone
game. Oh yeah, that's you're the spotlight. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of think like that's where we're headed here. Is you know, like Ron will have served his year and, you know, obviously an interesting kind of year for him. And, you know, how fair of an audition is it? I don't know. I mean, like he got the job right before the season started, but he did get the job for a full season, right? So, I mean, you know, you see what you see, and I'm not putting all this on him at all.
But, no.
But I think it makes sense. Honestly, like, it's hard to verbalize this and that's not good podcast fodder, but I kind of think like I would make a case that the Bennett era wasn't like, you know, over or anything, but like going into this past off season, they needed to make a lot of transfer additions. They needed to convince players that they were going to change things, right? All these things.
Revamp the offense.
Tell them, like, we're doing all this new stuff. I think that in itself is kind of the end of an era. It's like your brand is no longer the brand that you're no longer riding off your title anymore because, like, you're having to convince guys, like, oh, all the stuff that you've seen us do for years, like, instead of selling that, we're selling not doing that. So, I mean, like, you're kind of already moving out of that. And I think it kind of makes sense if you're going to look for a new coach, like, and kind of go in a different direction, maybe you go do something different, you know? And you don't have to – I'm not – there's nothing – you know, like, the Ben Ayers is the pinnacle of UVA basketball to this point. Nobody's trying to take that away from him, you know, or the program or what they built, but he's retired, you know? So it's like – you either have to kind of like try to keep it the way it is and hope that Ron can somehow like reboot the thing and get it all the way back to where it was, or you bring in somebody else and you hope that they can do their thing and how, you know, however well they do that. So,
yeah, I think everyone's waiting for the facts to come in Michael Jordan style. I'm back. It's not happening, but
I don't think so.
And to be
He doesn't
very
strike
clear,
me as a guy that's like regretting his decision so
he's
far.
like, I wanted to coach under my banner now. and to be very clear, like you were saying, like Ron was dealt one of the toughest hands that you can be, like, finding this out, and then the next day he had a scrimmage against VCU, who we know now is a very good team. And then kind of starting off
And they had
that
a bunch of
way,
guys out.
yeah, a bunch of guys injured. Jalen Worley was transferring, and we find that out. Was all happening like during the media day, and like it was just kind of it was a mess to start off with. You got the Christian Bliss situation going over throughout the season, and other guys, a lot of new guys in this program that are just trying to learn. They're like, hey man, I just came to learn the pack line and play, under Tony Bennett, and now like I'm thrust into all this. And so it's been a really tough season, and I think they have shown improvement. And kind of one of my biggest questions is, like, they talked about this 2-year plan. What was the 2-year plan? What did they think for the first year was going to look like? I don't know if they would have said this, but they have shown improvement throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think like the day before Tony retired, nobody was thinking they were going to be 15 and 15. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we might have thought they might not have made the tournament. And I think I was on the record saying, like, I don't know if this team is good enough this year to make the tournament. I definitely said that in the spring, but I didn't think they would be 500. But then also, I was factoring Worley in, right? And Tony in, right? Because Tony doesn't have years like this, really. So, I mean, since the very beginning of his tenure here, those are literally like the only 2 years he ever had like
I
this.
know. Every stat, you're going back to the beginning of Tony's era, or you're going to like Dave Leto years.
Yeah, this year was like full of unfortunate like streak breaking. You know, it was like this is the first time since 2010, first time since 2011. But yeah, I mean, I think like I don't want to say they were worse because they made like the coaching change happen, but I also like the league is pretty bad. I mean, I tweeted something out earlier. Five teams in the league have beaten a ranked team. I think it's like Duke, Louisville, Clemson, Georgia Tech and UNC. They have 7 wins combined against ranked teams and 16 losses. The other 13 teams are 0 and 42 against ranked teams. And literally, like the rest of the power conferences don't have more than like the Big East has like 4 teams that haven't beaten ranked teams, like the bottom four in their league. Every other league has like one team or no teams that haven't beaten a ranked team. So I mean, that kind of shows you where the league is. So, like, it's not like they're doing this against like one of the best ACCs either. You know, if they finish 8-12 or 9-11, like Tony probably could have gotten some more wins. But you know, some of that too is like he's one of the best coaches ever, probably. You know, in terms of just getting wins in the regular season. So, I think they would have maxed out, you know, what they could have, and they probably would have been a little better just because of like the, you know, keeping Worley and then assuming he stayed and then you know, just some continuity and everything. But I mean, it is what it is. I think like this, but you have to kind of look at the roster too and say like, I mean, they talked, like you said, the 2-year plan, like you're kind of admitting that year one is kind of a bridge to year two, right, by saying that. And some of that is like, you know, everybody could be back. So like, you're like, all right, you're 2 years with the same guys. But you know, you can't take that for granted either. And I think it's interesting, like going into this coaching search situation. We don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people are making a lot of like assumptions, right? Like, oh, if Ron stays, the whole roster will come back. And it's like, I wouldn't assume that. Like, I think that's a bad assumption. And it's not because guys don't like him. It's just they didn't come play for him. Like he, and you have to remember, he hasn't been back that long. Like IMAC and Rhodey and a lot of these other guys that they weren't even recruited by him. So like,
Not even Anthony Robinson was.
yeah, and they have, and I'm not saying like, you know, everybody has a different reason for being here or there or transferring or not transferring, but like those guys, I mean, like if Ron comes back, like they're gonna have to go out and get really aggressive in the portal for at least a couple of guys. And that's going to be true no matter who they hire. But, you know, if you're like a Rhodey or a McNeely, it's like, hey, I got 1 more year at this. Maybe I want to go play somewhere where I'm actually like for sure going to be contending. Versus, you know, you might bring in a new coach and that coach might get some of those guys to stay. Like, I mean, I think there's like a lot of trade-off there. I think a lot of people are assuming new coach comes in, everybody's going to leave. or Ron stays and everybody's going to stay. And I think like it's not, that's not how it's going to work.
Yeah, you're trying to predict something that cannot be predicted, and that's the transfer portal. Let's go into
Yeah.
what we kind of teased before, Matt Norlander's report. And a lot of this is stuff that's kind of been floating around out there, just kind of confirmed it and put
Yeah.
it onto a nice little, chart that they had there at CBS Sports. But basically the language in there basically saying only a matter of time before UVA is going to move on from Ron Sanchez. I know he talked about the search firm in there. David Teal from the Daily Press reported that's the Parker executive search firm that is
Yeah.
helping UVA through this search right now. And trying to get David on here soon to talk about that, maybe after the season's over and they're going
Yeah, I
through all
was like, who can I reach out
that.
to at this search firm and try to talk to them? But they're not going to talk to me about the search, so it's like, what's the point?
And then, Norlander went on to say that they've reached out to multiple candidates and named two of them. One pretty obvious, everyone's known, VCU's Ryan Odom. Just kind of makes put two and two together. And then New Mexico's Richard Pitino, which is a name I've been hearing for, past little bit now that they've kind of had some interest in. And you never know, this might be a search firm guy versus a UVA guy, or, kind of however that goes. And then the other name that's kind of floating around out there is Shaka Smart, another former VCU guy. I've been hesitant to see, how much interest he actually has in the job, but we'll kind of see. He doesn't get mentioned here in Norlander's report. And then also the kind of, I think the biggest news is UVA expecting to have $7 million in NIL
Yeah.
and revenue sharing for basketball next season, which is pretty competitive in like the top 25 in the country for basketball, especially with, a possible cap coming for revenue sharing and, all the like coming at probably around 20 million, and most of that going to football programs around the country. So that's pretty competitive there. Anything kind of stick out to you from what Matt reported there?
Yeah, and obviously Matt's very well sourced, so
Yeah.
it's a good
He's
report. But
a
I would say
good
like,
follow too, if you're not already following him on social media.
yeah, for sure. And I think like I'll start with the NIL part of it, or the NIL slash revenue sharing. I think it makes sense for that number to be in this piece that he did, or the coaching search kind of roundup. The UVA needs, that's a good number, so like it's good for UVA to put it out there.
Yeah.
And you have to think, like, if he has all this information, it's like, okay, the numbers out there, the candidates are out, like this is stuff
Yeah.
that they want out there, or somebody wants
Yeah.
it out there, right? And I think it also kind of, I'm sure that that number has been told to agents, right? Like, because you want guys, if you're like Richard Pitino or Odom or any of these guys, to kind of like know what they want to know what the buy-in is, what the commitment level is going to be. Seven's a lot. I mean, some of these other programs will have more,
Yeah.
and but I think like if you have seven and you're the coach at like VCU or New Mexico or whatever, you're probably a little bit more willing to jump to an ACC job that has seven, because a lot of ACC schools aren't going to pay seven.
Yeah.
So you're going to be like, I can put together a better than average roster with that sort of capital. I did the math and it was like you could pay two starters $1 million each, you could pay the other three like 400K, and I mean like it's a good amount of money, and it's competitive with where they've been, but with the candidates, I think both of those names are kind of out there at this point. Both of those guys I would anticipate moving this offseason regardless. And I think that's another part of it too. You mentioned like, is it a kind of a search firm guy or a UVA, like why is this out here, because somebody wants it out here. Because they get like the Shaka thing, like if you're working on something like that, you can keep that quiet. I'm not saying they are, I'm just saying like, there are certain things,
Exactly.
like UVA has always been cagey with coaching searches.
Yes.
But those two names make sense, and they're going to have other interests, right? Like Villanova's probably going to open. There's going to be some ACC jobs, Big East jobs, SEC jobs that are going to open, and they're going to recruit, or they're going to recruit. They're going to try to hire a lot of the same coaches.
Yeah.
Odom's going to be attractive to a bunch of schools. I think UVA's a really good fit, for him, because he grew up around here. He knows the area. He's kind of like, he has a modern approach, on both ends of the floor. He's proven that he can win different places, things like that. I think Patino is interesting, and I think there are probably some folks that go through his Wikipedia and they look at the Minnesota record and kind of are like taken aback by that. couple things. Like one, he was 31 when he got that job. So
Yeah,
like
he's very young, very
when
young.
I was 31, I mean I'm not that old, but like I wasn't ready to do that job. And you know, and that's a really
I
harsh
am
job.
31 and I'm nowhere close to a Power Four coaching job right
Well, I
now.
mean, like, I think also, you know, Minnesota is a hard job. It's not an average
Yeah.
job. It's, I mean, like, I think his second year there or one of the first years he was there, they won 24 games. And I saw that that was the most games they've ever won in a season. I was like, what? How is that possible?
Yeah.
So that was difficult. And obviously, he's killing it at New Mexico now. Then you kind of get into like the fit versus, you know, like, who's going to just like, is, you know, and that was kind of one of the things I was looking at with the piece I wrote was like, how much does fit matter? How much does, you know, being an alum or being from somewhere matter? How much does experience matter? You know, and all those things kind of have to be baked in. But, you know, at the end of the day, the AD and the search firm have to be able to look the guy in the eye and be like, this is the guy that we kind of believe in. And I think those two guys are good candidates. You mentioned Shaka. I think that's a, you know, kind of a pipe dream or like, you know,
Yeah.
maybe it's like a pie, you know, like a hope for the best kind of thing. It could happen, but like,
Yeah.
you know, it's the guys like that, like you call, you know, and you see what they want.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, like you have to, I think there's good candidates. I've seen people say like, I don't like the candidates. I think who are you waiting for? Like,
Yeah.
you know, like Phil Jackson circa 1998 isn't walking through the
Let
door,
me
you
cut in
know?
here because someone shared it on the Saber message board the other day of like the Wayback Machine going back to the Saber the day that Tony Bennett was hired. And let me
Oh
just
man,
tell
yeah,
you,
I remember.
yeah, it was not all ro like roses and everything. Let me see if I have one of them right here. Yeah, based on his current body of work, it really is a bit of an unknown. He may succeed beyond our wildest expectations and imagination, or he may fail miserably. Like, and that's kind of the gist of it. It like no one was like
Well,
overly eager.
I remember going to the site when he got hired and was like, oh, okay. And this is like before Twitter was even really a
I
thing. So
know.
like I found out on like the Daily Progress website or whatever that he got the job. I went to the Saber because I was like, oh, I wonder what people are saying. And back then I was like, I don't know, 19 or something. I was like watching way more basketball than I probably can watch now. And I was like, oh yeah, he's really good. Washington State's like the hardest job. And he was like, he had just been in the Sweet 16 the year before that. And I was like, oh yeah, that guy's really good. I wonder what people think. And I remember going to the board and everybody was like, who is this? Like, I've never heard of this guy. And I was like, do people not watch the tournament? Like, he was
I
just in the Sweet
know.
16 a year ago. But, you know, like, obviously it worked out. And that's kind of a cautionary tale, too, is like, you know, you never know how these things are going to. And that was one of the things from the piece that I did that you mentioned. Like, there's some hires when I went through there that I was like, man, I was sure this one was going to work. And then it didn't, you know, or like there were some where it's like, I didn't think this was going to work. And then it did. But a lot of the best ones, I'll say, are the ones that the day that the hire was made, everybody was like, yeah, that's a good hire. Like Nate Oates going to Alabama, everybody was like, that's a good hire. Dan Hurley going to UConn, everybody thought that was like, you know, there's a bunch of them like that. And those are usually the ones that work.
Yeah, let's dive into that now. Obviously, kind of just putting a bow on Norlander stuff. A lot of that, like we said before, has kind of been out there and just kind of like just confirming it. But you can tell, like, there's a lot of stuff going on around in the background, like we've expected. And even Ron Sanchez kind of made the point, like, you know, I don't focus or pay attention to what's going on across the street. Obviously, talking about, you know, the athletic administration and everything. But looking into this, yeah. Let's get the title out there. What do the last 10 years of college basketball hires tell us about UVA search? And this is something you put together, going back through it 10 years. You said you kind of played coy. It didn't take that long, but there's a lot of good data here. Just kind of going back through, you know, all these hires over the last decade.
Yeah, it took a little while. It's easier when you have multiple screens. You know, you can just kind of copy stuff in. But yeah, I mean, I had to build a spreadsheet and then sort of like categorize them. But once I did that, it was pretty easy to kind of find the trends. But yeah, I wanted to break it down by like how many of the coaches had been a head coach before? How many of them had been a head coach at a power conference school? Like you mentioned Shaka, like or Richard Pitino, he has too. How many, you know, are first time head coaches? How many were alums? How old were they? And then what'd they do when they got it, you know? And when I looked at it, I mean, some of the data, like I said, is kind of obvious. There's been coaches in every type of hire that have worked and not worked, right? So like in the, like we talk about Ron, like an internal promotion, there's been some, like John Shire has, I mean, like it's Duke, so he has a lot of resources at his disposal, but like they haven't gotten worse, you know, at all. And you know, there's been a couple other internal guys that have worked out. Hubert Davis went to the national championship his first year, and then, but now he's kind of on the hot seat.
It's up and down.
So I mean, like, but then like Syracuse, it really hasn't worked so far. Or you know, maybe next year they'll turn it around, but like we don't know. And you know, like Texas, they did an internal interim and then promo, and he's probably going to get fired in a couple weeks.
I'm hearing it's headed that down that way.
So I mean, like. But then there's been some, like I said, that have been have worked. And then, you know, you look at guys that have, you know, been mid-major coaches. I'd say half of them, you know, worked out. And then the group that was the most successful were guys that had won games at a Power Six job and then either took a, you know, kind of, I wouldn't even say like a lateral job, but like Buzz going from Tech to Texas A&M. Anybody who's done it at a Power Five level just – it was like a little bit more likely that they would do it again. And then obviously like one of the things that kind of stood out to me was like how many of the good, like best coaches right now have been fired, which would apply to Richard Pitino and Shaka Smart. And, you know, just talking about guys that we were just, you know, mentioning for this job, and their situations are a little different than some. But some of the guys like Rick Barnes, you know, is killing it at Tennessee now. And he was fired and he was an older guy. Kelvin Sampson, Bruce Pearl, and again, I will say with a caveat, a lot of these guys were fired for cause. So that, you know, they were good basketball coaches that just did something they weren't supposed to do or whatever. But, you know, like a lot of second chances have worked out. But then like, yeah, like I said, like the Dan Hurley type hire, TJ Olselberger at Iowa State, Nate Oates, like those are guys that were mid-major coaches that went to the tournament with whatever mid-major they coached and won the game or something. And like had a system or were really good at something and they went somewhere and they were able to just kind of keep it rolling. But they also had investment, you know, in, you know, from the school that they're at, especially in the NIL era. And another thing that like really hasn't worked, but I'm interested to see what happens over the next few years is like the NBA to college kind of hiring. They haven't really worked. I mean, like that was one of the least successful cohorts of coaches that I looked at. You know, you're talking about like Jerry Stackhouse and
Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin.
Chris Mullin was one of the worst.
Yeah.
You know, just if you just look at like wins and losses. And there were a few others. I know I'm forgetting some. Well, like Damon Stoudemire. But he had coached at Pacific.
Yes.
So, I mean, like that group was like not super successful. But now in the NIL era, does that shift? Mike Woodson's another one. Does that shift? And like Kevin Young is in his first year at BYU and he was an assistant with the Suns, I believe. Yeah. And they're doing great. I mean, they're, and he just got the number one player in the country. I mean, they have a lot of NIL.
Yes, there, a lot.
But I mean, like maybe schools are going to kind of start to look at those guys different. Cause it's more transactional, you know, like, and you know, there's maybe those guys can build a roster, turn it over and do better than a guy like even like a Tony who like was so reliant on like development over years and years and years instead of just coaching the games. So, I mean, who knows, but we're in the player acquisition business now in coaching, right? Like, I think that's an important thing to remember. If you can coach, but if you can't get players, it doesn't do any good.
No, so I wanted to ask if you could pick out one takeaway. What was the biggest, I guess, what said the most about a successful coach and kind of when you're looking at some of the better hires over the last decade?
Yeah, I think it's honestly, it was probably just a demonstrated ability to win a lot of games. Like the guys that have done really well, even guys, like I said, that haven't been P6 head coaches, have like Dan Hurley was doing, he had like a little bit of a rough start at Rhode Island, but that was like a terrible job when he took it over. And then he got him rolling. He won a tournament game. He won a bunch of games there. And then he went to UConn, kind of took a little while, got it going. Nate Oates was like killing it at Buffalo place. Yeah. You know, he took over for Bobby Hurley. So things were you know, but they have like no history of being good. And you know, he did a great job there and was able to take that to Alabama. And you know, he was a little bit more unproven though. I mean, he was a few years removed from being a high school coach. But I mean, like, there have been some mid-major coaches obviously that won a lot of games and then just didn't translate for whatever reason. But I think there is a fit component to it. I thought one of the interesting things, I wouldn't say this is like the biggest, like you have to do this kind of thing, but this might be like if you want to make a case for like Odom or like Mark Byington at Vanderbilt or something. There were a lot of coaches that were not alums necessarily, but they were from the area where they got hired. And those guys were trended a little bit better than some of the other groups. And I wonder if that's like a recruiting kind of thing, like where it's like, I know the area, I can come in here and I know guys, like I can get guys on my staff. The alum, and also like, I think the thing with alums, if you look at the data, some of the alum hires were guys that were hired because they were alums. I mean, let's be honest, like Chris Mullin, like Patrick Ewing. They weren't the most qualified guy for the job, but the school was like, they're the most qualified for this job because they are who, you know, whoever they are.
No one was
And
lining
like,
up outside for them except for those schools.
right. But then you had guys like, you know, I'll use Buzz Williams again. He just beat the number one team in the country last night. Like he's from Texas. He's not like a Texas A&M guy necessarily. Like they didn't hire him for that reason. They hired him because he's good. And then he comes to Texas and is like fits, you know? And I think that would apply maybe to like Odom, for example. You know, he's not a UVA alum, but you know, he grew up around here. He went to Hampton, Sydney. He's now been at VCU, so he's been around here. So I think like that would work. But then also like Nate Oates doesn't know anything about Alabama, and he's from Michigan.
I think
So
it's not as much about recruiting, because basketball recruiting is completely different than
it's
football,
national
where
anyway.
it's national. Yeah, you're going to these AAU tournaments, recruiting whoever the best kids are on the floor. I think the geographic part of it is, well, maybe they're guys that are staying more invested to, you know, kind of being there in the long term,
Yeah, that's a good point.
but also they fit with that kind of community, and they get people like kind of buying into them, because like, I like your example of Buzz Williams, like he's, from that area, like he knows kind of, what it is to be in Texas and everything like that. It's just like a more comfortability. Like, it's not Brian Kelly going down to LSU and, saying family and trying to
Yeah.
fit in there. He's a good coach, obviously, but like obviously the fit, it's taken a while for him to kind of absorb into there. So I think that's a key part of it, is just kind of fitting in, not as much the culture, because I think the culture thing can kind of get away sometimes, but yeah, just kind of guys that kind of fit into the community and kind of get fans excited. Because I think now when you're talking about NIL and all that, you're trying to get boosters and fans excited and, giving the money and kind of keeping this thing rolling.
Yeah, and I think like that's kind of, I guess, kind of to go back to your question, I think the guys that have been the most successful are jobs where the school seemed motivated to find the best coach. They were like, we're going to go hire the best coach, not we're going to hire a guy because he's our guy. We're going to bring this guy home, like, because he's an alum and like that matters to us. Like, you know, the guys that even like you look at, there were three guys that I highlighted from this year: Pat Kelsey, Dusty Bay, at Michigan, and then Byington at Vanderbilt, who are in their first year at that job, and they are doing great. And all three of them completely overhauled their rosters in one offseason. And again, it's a cautionary. I wouldn't say like UVA fans should expect some guy to come in here and get 10 new players and then they're going to win 27 games. But it just reminds you of what this business is now. Like, those guys didn't come in, and they're good coaches on their own, but they didn't win purely because they're just that good at coaching basketball necessarily. They won because they identified players that could come in and play at the school, and then were able, with the resources they had, to get them to come. And that's an area where, frankly, I think UVA, like, part of their undoing of the last since the title has just been the getting them to come part. Like, they have identified a lot of good players in recruiting it, but they haven't always been able to finish those recruitments out. And they've lost some to Duke and places like, you're going to lose those sometimes.
It does
But
feel like a
they
lot of
needed
times,
to, but they needed to win like one or two of them, you know. And that, I think that's been the difference. And even with the portal, like I said last year, they kind of had to sell to transfers and high school guys that they were going to be like rebooting things. But yeah, I mean, I think like May and Byington and those guys, like they kind of show you if you get a good job and you get the resources and you can either you or a GM or whoever can identify the players that can come in here and fit, you can turn it around pretty quick. And I think it's like I said, it's a the fit is important and all that stuff, but you need a guy that's going to be able to get players and then get them coached up, you know,
Yeah,
in that order.
absolutely. Last thing, the only data point I don't see on here is former like coaches' sons. Obviously Tony Bennett,
Yeah,
but then we're
there's a
talking
lot
about
of those.
Richard Pitino and Ryan Odom right now. Both of
Yeah.
those co sons of really successful college head coaches. I'm like,
Yeah.
is there a trend like we're just not looking at here?
Well, also, like, I think some of it too, if we're being honest, is like, I don't want to say nepotism, but it's like they had to get their start and they all were starting from a better place than like some random dude who just wanted to get into coaching. Like Ryan Odom's dad obviously coached in the ACC and knew everybody. And I can't remember where he started his career. It was pretty low, but then he was at Tech and, you know, a couple other, I think he was at George Mason and he was at Charlotte. And then Pitino kind of like, he actually, you know, it's really funny. Mark Byington, who was another name I've kind of been looking at, you know, he was at College of Charleston with Tom Herrien, who is an assistant here under Pete Gillen, I think, and he left to be the coach there. And he was there twice. And there was one year in the middle where he wasn't there. He like came to Virginia and then went back or something. And that one year he was here was the year Pitino, his first year as a coach, was like. So I was like, oh, they didn't overlap, but barely. But yeah, they both kind of bounced around, Odom and Pitino and Tony Bennett, obviously. But look at Tony's career. I mean, like he had a meteoric rise, but a lot of it's because he started as an assistant at Wisconsin. You know, like that's a pretty good place to start.
a great
Yeah.
place to start.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it means you can't coach or anything either. And obviously, like those guys, like both Odom and Pitino would not be in the conversation for this job if they hadn't gone out and done something on their own. Like
Yeah,
if
absolutely.
Odom's about to win the Atlantic 10 and take a third team to the tournament, he's the first coach to ever beat a 16 seed or beat a one as a 16. He's won a ton of games. He plays good style basketball. Pitino last night won the Mountain West regular season. Last year they won the Mountain West tournament. You know, he wasn't great at Minnesota. He got fired, but like, yeah, that job's really hard, and I think he accounts for most of their tournament games since like the turn of the century. So,
Yeah. Well, it's really good stuff, and it's kind of just a guide to this whole coaching search, just kind of seeing, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and
yeah.
sometimes there are guys that kind of break the mold, and sometimes the mold doesn't kind of hold up, but we'll kind of see how it plays out over these next couple of weeks. Like the end of the season's almost here, and we're gonna find out some answers pretty soon here, because you kind of have to get going in this day and age with the transfer portal. But real
Yeah.
quick, we're gonna slide this in there. We took so much time with all that we'll go quickly through it. But UVA announcing the Embrace the Pace team coming to the TBT tournament, the basketball tournament this summer. They're gonna play JPJ July 18th through 23rd, I think. Fun thing I just wanted to do, because obviously already confirmed, is Kyle Guy and Kihei Clark are going to be on the team. The co-general manager, the former assistant coach, Johnny Carpenter, is going to be there too. But any guys, and this is assuming no NBA, current NBA players, because usually they have a non-compete. They can't go play for in the summer for some team. So no Ty Jerome, no DeAndre Hunter, Trey Murphy, Sam Hauser, Malcolm Brogdon, so on and so on.
Now
Any
that would be a good
guys?
team.
That'd be a great team. They would probably sweep it.
Yeah.
But are there any guys that you would be excited to kind of see back in JPJ with not quite a UVA uniform on, but playing in that area?
Yeah, I mean, well, they have Kihei and they have Kyle. So that's a lot of ball handling and shooting. Probably need some bigs. I was gonna say, can they get Isaiah Wilkins to play? He's already here.
He's here, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like they need somebody like that for sure. I feel like in a tournament like this, you're not gonna be running like blocker mover stuff. So I mean, I think you're probably going to need guys that can create off the bounce and shoot, right? So
Yeah, Kyle
NBA's
said they
had,
would be a little bit more adventurous offensively, so
yeah, there you go. I mean, like Justin Anderson, I don't know what he's doing right now, but
he is
like,
overseas in Europe, so he's definitely
yeah,
in playing shape.
that would make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, he's one of the first guys I thought of. The other guy I really like is Mike Toby, because I don't know if people remember, he played on those Slovenian
Slovenia,
teams
yep.
with Luka Doncic, and they had a little good chemistry there. So I think he'd be a good fit with these
That was
teams.
like a Mike Toby renaissance, that
It
like
was.
Olympics that they played together. And I was like, oh, Mike Toby, he was scoring like 15 points a game or
I
whatever.
know.
Him, and then like you have guys that are a little older, like Akil and Darion and
Yeah, that's the
some
other
of
thing you
those
got to think
guys.
about. Who's still in shape? Who's still wanting to play? Like, I think Akil still plays. I'm not 100% sure. And
Once they
I
start to get to Europe and like other places, they it's hard to keep track because they bounce
yeah.
around so much.
London Parentis is another one. I know they already got Kihei Clark, but like if Parentis is available, I think you take him.
There you go. I mean, I think like there's enough UVA alums that are not in the NBA that where you could put a pretty good team together, I would
Yeah,
imagine.
I was going to see. I think Kyle tagged a bunch of guys when he was trying to recruit. Braxton Key just got signed to a two-way
I saw
contract,
that.
so he's out. He's not available.
Or like Jaden Gardner. Like,
Jaden
is he,
Gardner
and
be
he's in
good.
Europe?
He was, yeah, he's somewhere right now. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, he tagged Parentis, Akil, Justin Anderson. Braxton, Jerome Mainse, there's a name,
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a
and
throwback.
Mario Šajak, that would be, he's been getting
Chance to
some
transfer
points,
back.
yeah, he's been getting some points in the G League, and he looks pretty good, so I think he would be a
Yeah,
good
and I guess he
fit
did
back.
play with Kyle for a year, that first year.
Yeah,
Him and
he was there for
Darius Thompson.
that weird 15, was it? Was it 15,
17.
16, 16, 17? Yeah.
17.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun just to kind of see some of these guys back, and
The
we'll
thing I'm
see
most
how.
excited about was you said July 17th, 18th, like nothing's going on at that time. Like there's
Exactly.
nothing. We don't have fall camp yet.
Especially in
NFL hasn't
Charlottesville.
started. Yeah, you're
Yeah.
just in the doldrums of summer and trying to get through it. So I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah, I will be there if there's credentials or if there I just have to buy a ticket. We'll see. But Justin, thank you so much for coming on. I think we covered a lot today, a lot more than I was even expecting. But obviously, a really interesting time for UVA basketball coming up in the next couple of weeks, and we'll kind of see how they finish out the regular season against Syracuse, and then down in the ACC tournament coming up. But thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, see you at football practice.
See you at football. Yeah, spring football's going on, baseball, like you got it all going on right now. And you can catch all that over at Cavs Corner and also at thesaber.com. We got some coverage coming up over the next couple of weeks. And that is going to do it for the Who's On podcast this week. We'll be back next week. A little bit of preview of the ACC tournament. We'll see about trying to get someone on, a special guest. We'll see how that goes. But thanks for listening to the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. We'll see you next week.
Field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.